Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 254, titled Vouch for This. As I'm speaking on October 19th of the year 2000, the various electoral races, including the presidential race, are in full swing around the United States. One of the major focal points as far as issues is that of education. We have, among others, George W. Bush claiming to be the education president, and someone who hails from the same political and social philosophical tradition as George Bush, someone named Tim Draper, has been very active here in California behind Proposition 38, which proposes school vouchers. One of the things that I find ironic about the endorsement of, quote, education, unquote, and the populist slash every man slash every woman sort of multicultural touchy-feely spin that Tim Draper is putting on the school vouchers issue. One of the things that I find ironic about it is that Tim Draper, like George W. Bush, is the heir to a long, very brutal, elitist, and social Darwinian social tradition, which is anything but populist or multicultural, and which aims at anything but a level playing field as far as opportunity goes. I haven't got time, due to the limitations of this broadcast in terms of time, to go into the issue of education. Suffice it to say that the whole vouchers issue is a simplistic approach to a much more complicated problem, and if you're not going to fund education departments and not going to channel funding into schools so that you have good schools and can pay teachers in such a way as to make education a desirable field for young people to go into, quite simply, you're not going to get good teachers. There's no quick fix to a problem like that, and public schools need funding, and the Republicans have opposed virtually every education bill that has ever come before the U.S. legislature. One of the things that's important about alternative news media is that they hopefully at least can present the truth that needs to be gleaned from the spin that the mainstream media are putting on things. The San Jose Mercury News of today, today being October 19th of the year 2000, had an article about Proposition 38 and Tim Draper, which I found alarming and more than a little disgusting in terms of the spin that was put on this. Again, I haven't got time to cover the issue of education due to the limitations of time, but suffice it to say that Tim Draper not only hails from the same tradition, the same political tradition as George W. Bush, he is the heir to an elitist and social Darwinian social philosophy which is antithetical to the whole notion of populism and public education. This article, again from the San Jose Mercury News of Thursday, October 19th of the year 2000, is by Patrick May, last name M-A-Y, of the Mercury News. Its headline, Crusade for School Vouchers is Businessman's Toughest Deal Yet. And this is about Tim Draper, and speaking of Tim Draper and skipping down, we read, he's getting plenty of grief already from the California Teachers Association for his latest startup venture, Proposition 38, a November 7th ballot initiative that would give every school-age child a voucher worth at least $4,000 a year to use at any school, including private or parochial, that they choose. This blueprint to dismantle what Draper sees as the, quote, unhappy monopoly of public education, unquote, is an apt crusader for a free marketeer who helped bring the Silicon Valley success story to life. Vouchers have been tried before, but with his, quote, universal, unquote, system where aid is given to everyone regardless of income, Draper is shooting for the moon. Called a visionary, unquote, by friends and, quote, naive and arrogant, unquote, by critics, the father of four has vowed to raise $40 million, at least $20 million of it from his own pocket, to sell voters on Proposition 38. Vouchers will level the playing field for all kids, the tall and gangly Draper said last week, huddling with staff members in the Proposition 38 command post at the Redwood City offices of Draper, Fisher, and Jurvetson. That's J-U-R-V-E-T-S-O-N. Quote, we'll be a much better country if everyone believes that no matter where they start, they can rise or fall based on their drive, their risk-taking, and their innovation, unquote. Again, quoting, and when that happens, said the man who flies the stars and stripes outside his home all year long, again quoting, America will once again be at the top of the top, unquote. And skipping down, prompted by his own child's question about what he does for a living, Draper started BizWorld, a nonprofit group that brings in volunteers to teach grade school kids about business. Draper himself ended up spending a lot of time in front of classrooms spreading his free market vision. Quote, I kind of thought in the back of my mind that if my business ever allowed me a little bit of time and if I had the resources, I'd do what I could to fix the problems I saw, unquote, Draper said. Finally, during the 9 months he served on the State Board of Education under then-Governor Pete Wilson, Draper began to see the education system in California in a state of crisis. Quote, I started thinking this isn't working, and we need to look inside the system at what's wrong, he said, again quoting, but that's hard for people to do, to say we found the problem, and it is us, unquote. Skipping down, Union President Wayne Johnson, who acknowledges he has never personally met the man pushing Proposition 38, speculated about why a multimillionaire could take on such a controversial campaign. He suggested Draper could somehow profit personally by selling computer software to private schools, or that Proposition 38 is really just a trial balloon Draper is floating to get his name out for a possible run at the governor's seat. And as we skip down in the article, we see a description of Draper's background, and when we flesh out some of the details concerning Draper's family background, which we're going to do in a second, we can see very clearly that Draper comes from the same sort of political and social philosophical heritage as George W. Bush. His progenitors helped to effect the Wall Street financing of Adolf Hitler and the fascist powers of Europe, and there is a fundamentally elitist and, again, social Darwinian spin to the Draper family social philosophy, and it is anything but populist and anything but the sort of multicultural everyman slash everywoman outlook that is portrayed in this very, very puff piece, this Mercury News article, which is very much of a puff piece. Skipping down about the Draper family, we read, success has come to Draper down many avenues. A third-generation venture capitalist, the tall and boyish-looking 42-year-old has had plenty of inspiration. His grandfather, General William H. Draper, Jr., helped implement the Marshall Plan in Europe after World War II, then became one of the West Coast's first venture capitalists when he founded Draper, Gator, and Anderson in 1958. Tim Draper's father, Bill Draper, ran for Congress in a special election in 1967 and later was appointed chairman of the Export-Import Bank by President Reagan. Skipping down, the elder Draper said he and his wife, quote, both have the attitude that America is great, because it's such a melting pot, unquote. Well, the veteran listeners to the program may recognize the name General William H. Draper, Jr. As an investment professional with Dillon Reed, he was deeply involved in securing Wall Street money to help finance Hitler and Mussolini. Then he was appointed to the key position of the post-World War II Reconstruction Government of Germany, administering the economic reconstruction of Germany, saw to it that the same industrialists and financiers who had backed Hitler were put right back in power. His son, Bill Draper, although it's not mentioned here, helped to capitalize George W. Bush's business ventures, and just like Prescott Bush Sr. and George Herbert Walker, George W.'s grandfather and great-grandfather, the ancestors of Tim Draper were also involved in the capitalization of the fascist powers of Europe, Hitler in particular. We're going to talk about William H. Draper, Jr., Tim Draper's grandfather, in order to penetrate the touchy-feely rhetoric and get a look at the social and political tradition to which Tim Draper is heir, and it's very much like the social and political tradition to which George Bush is heir as well. This is an excerpt from For the Record program number 102 entitled Connecting the Dots. In turn, this is taken from the text The Splendid Blonde Beast by Christopher Simpson, published in soft cover by Common Courage Press, copyright 1995. Of Dillon Reed and its role in capitalizing Germany in the 1920s and 30s, Christopher Simpson writes as follows. Dillon Reed and Company, private U.S. investment bankers, specialized in loans to Deutsche Bank, Siemens, and Fleek interests. Between 1925 and the stock market crash in 1929, these loans amounted to more than a quarter of $1 billion. Friedrich Fleek built his fortune during the 1920s using bonds sold by Dillon Reed to finance what today might be called leverage buyouts of German and Polish coal and steel companies. So again, note the role of Dillon Reed in recapitalizing Germany in the 20s and 30s, and note also one of the major recipients of Dillon Reed largesse, namely the Fleek Corporation, the Fleek interests of Friedrich Fleek. As we're going to see, or as we saw, I should say, in the 2 half-hour segments entitled Tides of 20th Century Capital Flow, as well as in Uncle Sam and the Swastika, one of the principal figures from Dillon Reed, William H. Draper Jr. Of the Draper textile family, a very prominent and reactionary New England textile family. We're going to take a look at the Draper family and another member of that family, Wycliffe Draper, later on in our second half-hour segment. But Brigadier General William Draper of Dillon Reed was put in charge of the economic section of the U.S. occupation government, basically the Allied Control Council of Germany, and as the top American officer in charge with overseeing the economic reconstruction of Germany, William H. Draper was instrumental in seeing to it that the same German industrial and financial elite that had supported Hitler was put right back in power. And recall, as we looked at in Uncle Sam and the Swastika and the two half-hour segments about 20th century capital flow, those industrialists on the German end constituted the German end of a transatlantic financial and industrial axis. And as we'll see later on in these two segments, that axis was also an ideological and intellectual axis as well. Of Brigadier General William Draper, his role with Dillon Reed, and his role with the Allied Control Council for Germany, Christopher Simpson writes as follows in The Splendid Blonde Beast. Dillon Reed and company partner William Draper became pivotal to the semi-clandestine shift in U.S. policy toward Germany that summer. By the way, that summer is 1945. Continuing, by 1945, Secretary of War Stimson and Secretary of the Navy Forrestal, Dillon Reed's former president, engineered Draper's appointment as chief of the economic division of the Joint Allied Control Council for Germany, the central occupation government at the time, and as director of economic policy for the German territories administered by the U.S. As such, Draper emerged as by far the most powerful U.S. industrial and finance official in occupied Germany, with overall authority for implementing Joint Chiefs of Staff 1067 and other U.S. denazification programs aimed at German bankers and businessmen. Skipping down. Prior to the war, he had been corporate treasurer for Dillon Reed and an officer of the German Credit and Investment Corporation of New Jersey, a Dillon Reed-sponsored holding company that specialized in international investments in Hitler-era Germany. He prided himself on his willingness to make tough, even brutal decisions to protect his vision of the common good. And note this next passage here, because it deals with the Draper family, their textile empire, and in particular the austerely run, I would say authoritarian-style company towns that the Drapers ran. We're going to hear reference to this in our second half-hour segment. The Draper family owned textile mills, patents on textile equipment, and a substantial share of the international trade in fibers. Their New England mill towns featured model workers' communities, unquote, where the company enforced a Draper family formula of no unions, proper sanitation, and good behavior. And bear in mind the Draper family's company towns. We're going to touch on those later in connection with another key member of the Draper family, Wycliffe Draper, a prominent American eugenicist and associate, actually prime financial backer of the Pioneer Fund. Bear in mind that as a result of the activities of people like William Draper, the American end of this transatlantic financial and industrial and ideological axis that I've spoken about, the very same German industrial and corporate elite that had supported Hitler was put right back in power. That, again, was from For the Record program number 102. Note, again, Brigadier General William H. Draper Jr.'s role in capitalizing Nazi Germany in the first place and helping to see to it that the same powers were returned to power in the post-World War II period. I would note that both George Herbert Walker and Prescott Bush Sr., George W.'s grandfather, or great-grandfather and grandfather, respectively, as we looked at in, among other programs, For the Record broadcast 248, as well as 186, were deeply involved in the financing of Hitler and the fascist powers of Europe in the pre-World War II period. They were associates of Brigadier General William H. Draper, Jr. Two of the aspects of this article from the Mercury of 10/19/2000 that I found disgusting in terms of reading what it is that Tim Draper, the heir to this tradition, actually had to say. Re-quoting a couple of passages, again, quote, "We'll be a much better country if everyone believes that no matter where they start, they can rise or fall based on their drive, their risk-taking, and their innovation," unquote. And skipping down, the elder Draper said he and his wife, quote, "both have the attitude that America is great because it's such a melting pot." Well, in fact, the Draper family is about anything but presenting a level playing field and about anything but endorsing the concept of the melting pot. In addition to helping to capitalize Hitler and seeing to it that the financial and industrial backers of Hitler were put right back in power in the post-World War II period, the Draper family has historically been deeply involved with eugenics, and specifically with the Pioneer Fund, a pre-World War II institution that has survived to the present day and that has not only influenced the racial legislation of Nazi Germany, but also the racist bestseller The Bell Curve, and also anti-immigrant legislation in the United States. We're going to return once again to For the Record program number 102, and we're going to listen to a passage about Wycliffe Draper, the cousin of William H. Draper, Jr., the grandfather of Tim Draper, and we're going to hear about the Pioneer Fund. Then we're going to hear William H. Draper, Jr. weighing in on the need for population control in the Third World, this when he was invited to testify before Congress by George Bush, Sr. This, once again, is from For the Record program number 102, entitled Connecting the Dots. Now, in our first half-hour segment, we talked about the Dillon Reed Company, one of the main Wall Street elements in the American end of this transatlantic financial, industrial, and, as we shall see, ideological axis that I've been talking about. We also took a look at Brigadier General William H. Draper, Jr., a former corporate treasurer with Dillon Reed and key official with a Dillon Reed Company that specialized in promoting investments in Hitler-era Germany. Brigadier General William Draper was in charge of the economic reconstruction of Germany in the U.S. section, in the U.S. Occupied zone of Germany after World War II, and as such, as we looked at in the Uncle Sam and the Swastika program and the two half-hour segments about the tides of 20th century capital flow, Brigadier General William Draper oversaw the reconstruction and the perpetuation of the German industrial and financial elite that comprised the German end of this transatlantic financial and industrial axis, a key American element of which was Draper and Dillon Reed. One of Draper's relatives, Wycliffe Draper, of the same Draper textile family, was also a key player in 20th century fascism. One of the major transatlantic links of fascism that goes again from the United States to Europe, Germany in particular, concerns the eugenics connection. Eugenics is a pseudoscience which, in fact, presents a pseudoscientific and alleged genetic basis for confirmed and long-standing social prejudices such as racism, anti-Semitism, and so forth. Eugenics was a major power and is a major influence in the United States, and in fact, American eugenics legislation and thinking exerted a profound influence over the Nazi racial legislation and the German eugenicists who ultimately spawned the Nazi racial laws which led to the extermination programs at Auschwitz. I've discussed eugenics and the German-American eugenics connection, sort of the ideological component of this transatlantic financial and industrial axis in a couple of miscellaneous archive shows available from Spitfire. One of those is Euthanasia and Reproductive Rights in Nazi Germany and Contemporary America from March of 1988, and the other is The Seeds of Nuremberg, a miscellaneous archive series from the spring of 1994. And again, those are available from Spitfire. One of the major source books discussing the German-American eugenics connection is the book The Nazi Connection, subtitled Eugenics, American Racism, and German National Socialism. That book is authored by Stefan Kuhl, K-U-U-M-L-A-U-T-H-L. Kuhl is described on the back cover as a sociologist and historian at the University of Bielefeld in Germany. This landmark work, again entitled The Nazi Connection, Eugenics, American Racism, and German National Socialism, was published in hardcover by the Oxford University Press and copyright 1994. One of the major elements in the eugenics connection and an element of ideological and political continuity from the eugenics of the Hitler period to the eugenics of today is the Pioneer Fund. The Pioneer Fund was one of the major factors behind the racist bestseller The Bell Curve that topped the New York Times bestseller list in 1994. And as we saw in The Seeds of Nuremberg, and as we'll touch on again right now, the Pioneer Fund not only influenced and praised and supported Hitler's racial legislation, particularly the early racial legislation, but in turn the Pioneer Fund luminaries such as Harry Laughlin were honored by the Nazi-dominated academe in the late 1930s. Please note that the chief financial backer of the Pioneer Fund was Wycliffe Draper. Now, Wycliffe Draper is of the same textile empire family, the Drapers, that Brigadier General William Draper was from, the fellow from Dillon Reed we looked at in our first segment. Turning to the Nazi connection about the Pioneer Fund, its connections to Hitler, and its activities in the present period, and the financing of the Pioneer Fund by Wycliffe Draper, a relative of William Draper, Jr., we read, Harry H. Laughlin and Frederick Osborne, scientists who played a leading role in the American eugenics movement, and, as I will illustrate, who supported Hitler's race policy, initiated the Pioneer Fund in 1937. Textile magnate Wycliffe Draper, acted as its primary benefactor. The fund's stated purpose was to, quote, improve the character of the American people, unquote, by encouraging the procreation of descendants of, quote, white persons who settled in the original 13 colonies prior to the adoption of the Constitution and or from related stocks, unquote, and to provide aid in conducting research on, quote, race betterment with special preference to the people of the United States, unquote. Today, the Pioneer Fund is the most important financial supporter of research concerning the connection between race and heredity in the United States. It also continues to finance studies in the areas of eugenics, human genetics, and immigration. More about Wycliffe Draper, the financial backer of the Pioneer Fund, and his activities up into the 1960s, skipping down. Wycliffe Draper, who until the 1960s served as both the main benefactor and the most influential figure in the Pioneer Fund, also worked with the United States House Un-American Activities Committee to demonstrate that blacks were genetically inferior and ought to be, quote, repatriated, unquote, to Africa. And again, Wycliffe Draper is of the same textile family as Brigadier General William Draper of Dillon Reed, and the chief American official in charge of reinstituting the Nazi financial and industrial elite at the end of World War II. We're going to turn to the July 1998 issue of the Searchlight magazine. Now, the Searchlight is a British anti-fascist publication, not to be confused with the American Spotlight, its opposite number. The July 1998 issue of the Searchlight concerns the eugenics movement and its influence on Nazism. The cover is entitled Gene War. And in this July 1998 issue of the Searchlight, there's an article entitled The Funding of the Science about the Pioneer Fund. It's co-authored by Barry Mailer, director, and Keith Hurt, research associate of the Institute for the Study of Academic Racism. And of Wycliffe Draper and the Pioneer Fund. Well, first of all, we're going to talk about the Pioneer Fund's support for the bell curve. Most of the leading Anglo-American academic race scientists of the past several decades have been funded by the Pioneer Fund, including William Shockley, Hans J. Eysenck, Arthur Jensen, Roger Pearson, Richard Lynn, J. Philippe Rushton, R. Travis Osborne, Linda Gottfriedson, Robert A. Gordon, Daniel R. Vining Jr., Michael Levin, and Seymour Itzkoff, all cited in the bell curve. Now we're going to talk more about Wycliffe Draper. Now bear in mind the Draper textile family's company towns in New England. You heard a reference to that in a discussion of the background of Brigadier General William Draper, Jr. from The Splendid Blonde Beast. Coordinate that or collate that with the information from this particular article about Wycliffe Draper, his relative. We read, Draper grew up in Hopedale, Massachusetts, a company town built by his family, living in what one historian has called, quote, a quasi-feudal manor house, unquote. The company maintained almost total control over the lives of company workers until 1912. Now, that again is Wycliffe Draper of the Draper family. What we're going to do now is to come back to William H. Draper, Jr., the Brigadier General who was formerly a Dillon Reed official and who then worked after the war to help restore the German financial and industrial elite. And we're going to take a look at him in a quasi-eugenics context, not unlike the type of activity favored by his relative Wycliffe Draper. We're going to turn to the landmark recent book, Emerging Viruses, AIDS and Ebola, Nature, Accident, or Intentional. This book is authored by Leonard Horowitz, Dr. Leonard Horowitz, published in hardcover by Tetrahedron Incorporated, copyright 1996. And this book makes a very convincing case that AIDS and Ebola were man-made and, in all likelihood, deliberately created. I realize that's a tall order. There are, first of all, there's an archive show entitled RFA 16 about the probable deliberate creation of AIDS as a genetically engineered biowarfare weapon. And there are also several discussions with Dr. Leonard Horowitz available from Spitfire, an hour interview that I conducted in the fall of 1997, and a massive interview with Dr. Horowitz, Ed Haslam, Alan Cantwell, and Dr. Garth Nicholson. All of those available from Spitfire. One of the elements leading up to the probable deliberate creation of AIDS was the perceived need on the part of U.S. foreign policymakers under the Nixon administration for a need to reduce the population in the Third World in order to reduce political unrest. And what we're going to do now is to turn to emerging viruses, AIDS and Ebola, Nature, Accident, or Intentional, by Dr. Leonard Horowitz. We read, only days after the Department of Defense requisitioned the $10 million from Congress to fund the development of AIDS-like viruses, on July 29, 1969, the House Republican Research Committee Task Force on Earth Resources and Population, chaired by the Honorable George Bush of Texas, cited the urgent need for population control activities to fend off a growing third world crisis. Earlier in the week, their committee had heard from General William H. Draper, Jr., National Chairman of the Population Crisis Committee, and Dr. William Moran, President of the Population Reference Bureau. That's the same William Draper, the relative of Wycliffe Draper from Dylan Reed and the U.S. Allied Control Council that we looked at earlier. Once again, testifying before Congress at the invitation of George Bush, then a congressman from Texas, and himself an individual whose family was deeply involved with this transatlantic financial and industrial axis, as we looked at in the Uncle Sam and the Swastika program. William Draper Jr. is testifying before Congress about the need to hold down third world population. And again, Len Horowitz maintains that AIDS, at least to a certain extent, appears to have been developed to do just exactly that. Skipping down, after talking about how George Bush, then a representative from Texas, brought the House up to speed on the expert testimony, following his speech, population control was thought so urgent that President Nixon, quote, proposed a major transformation in the foreign assistance program of the United States. That again from For the Record program number 102. Note that the concern with holding down the population in the United in the Third World resulted in a series of subsidized vaccination programs in the Third World. That, of course, would not hold down the population but tend to increase it. As noted in the discussion of emerging viruses, those countries then experienced viruses which helped to deplete their population. So note again the political heritage to which Tim Draper is heir. I don't want to be misunderstood as characterizing Tim Draper as a fascist, but rather to stress that he is not a lone wolf. Rather, he is the heir to a very well-established and very clear political tradition and social philosophy, and although not a fascist, that social philosophy and political tradition to which he is heir, the tradition of the Draper family, is fundamentally elitist, it is racist, and it certainly found a ready ally in fascism, and fascism in turn found the eugenics movement very useful. Note also that in the person of William H. Draper Jr., the grandfather of Tim Draper, we have yet another of his ancestors involved, part of his direct lineage involved in the financing of Adolf Hitler, and that placed William H. Draper Jr. in the same company as Prescott Bush Sr. and George Herbert Walker Bush. Note that if, in fact, some of Len Horowitz's ruminations concerning AIDS and the vaccination program in Africa are correct, that would be carrying the eugenics thinking of the Draper family to its grim and logical conclusion. So, again, it's important to see things in their historical and sociological context and not to see things as suddenly emerging full-blown from the news from the pages of our newspapers. Beware of the voucher program and beware of Tim Draper and the political heritage to which he is air, because it has nothing to do with a melting pot and it has nothing to do with level playing fields for all comers. I've alluded to other tapes, and we've of course excerpted For the Record program 102. All of those tapes are available from a tape duplication service called Spitfire. That's one word, Spitfire. They're located at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Email is mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. And there's a list of and description of the various tapes available from Spitfire on the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. And beginning with the description for the Record program 233, the descriptions are sourced. That concludes For the Record program number 254, Vouch for This, being recorded on October 19th of the year 2000. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.